This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy, standing 6'2", 300 and something pounds, from the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, it's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, you're still here? I can't believe I'm even still doing this introduction, no less you still being here. Abortion is healthcare. Fair enough, brother. If you're gonna bring up good points like that, keep coming back. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, my only silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur's in the living room, snoring on the couch. He can't even hear that I'm recording. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, fellow HeadGum family, from the Root Tales of Magic, we got Tim Blatt.
Did you see that? Did you see that thing flying by going, hey, hey, hey? And he must have not seen it because, know what? It's too high above the frame of the Zoom.
But I heard it. It was a bird. It was a plane. It's Tim Blatt, motherfuckers. Yeah.
Hello.
Well, sir. Hello. Speaking of spotting a bird, I will say I get a lot of unusual pitches for topics when I discuss with my guests ahead of time. But yours just saying looking at birds. I'm familiar with the expression bird watching or birding, but just the idea of looking at birds is so perfect for High and Mighty because it's like as raw, basic, you know, as like primal as it's so diluted down into just like, there's a bird. Let's look at it. Let's not journal. Let's not take photos. Just look at the fucking thing.
We know not to dive right into it, but this is a thing where, like, I say it like that because the moment I got into bird watching, I, like, started following certain accounts on Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. And, like, immediately it became clear to me that this thing that I discovered as, like, a very nice pastime, a very, like, connective, natural, a way to connect with nature no matter where you are in the city or in a new city or on the road or in the country, I could quickly saw that, like, birding and bird watching was, like, as socially complex as any other, as improv, as comedy, as any other creative pursuit I've ever been a part of. And there was, like, infighting and sort of, like, mores and sort of, like, certain people you didn't want to be like and, like, memes and jokes about stuff. And I was just like, this is something that I cannot have be connected to any sort of hierarchy or social inclining or social, or honestly, social awareness. And so I do say looking at birds because if I say birding, some people get activated and they're like, and they start talking about that, which I'm into. Like, I'm frankly into it, but, like, it is not my world. And the moment you step, you know, the moment you step into something with, like, even the suggestion of obsessiveness, you suddenly have, like, a pathway towards a whole community that some of it's cool, but I can't make my life.
You're actively avoiding a touch of that community is what we're saying. It's almost as if, like, I go for a fucking withering, disgusting jog once a week or every night after work versus I'm a runner. And now all of a sudden you're like, got to talk to other runners and runner memes. And are you wearing zero drop shoes? And it's like all this. And it's like you go from like just looking at birds to like, oh, so your favorite bird is the blue footed booby. All right, you fucking prick, you know, or like you're doing it wrong or you're someone has like. And, like, sharing anything, like, anything that you do earnestly is, like, in a public means these days is, like, a disaster. And so it's, like, keeping it something that is just for you is, like, a very it feels, like, cartoonishly powerful. To not turn birding in, to not turn looking at birds into content, a podcast, its own Instagram, its TikTok, like, to just do it for you. Feels like I'm just writing a novel that no one's gonna read. Like, it feels like a huge thing these days to just keep something to yourself.
Oh yeah. And like, you know, of course you step into it and you like any means to connect with people is cool, you know, and like, and just to find a different way. And if someone's more like, someone else is into birding and talking about birds and looking about birds, I'm going to enjoy talking about it. But it's that one step farther, where they're like, here's, have you seen this? Did you go to this place? Do you know this thing? When like that one thing that clicks my head and I'm like, I was into this to connect with you. I was not into this to like start competing. I went to a Yankees game. An Orioles fan. I had my Orioles hat. I went to an Orioles, the Orioles were playing the Yankees. And the guy next to me was like getting into fights all around. He was like really an aggressive dude. And he was looking for, he was like trying to get into fights with everyone. He turns to me, big Yankees fan. And he goes like, so why Orioles? And I go, you know, it's where I, you know, where I grew up. And like, you know, it's my home team. And he's like, okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I could tell I wasn't giving him enough of what he wanted. And then he went like, well, if you're an Orioles fan, then like, let me ask you if you're unbiased, let me ask you this. And he asked me some in the weeds thing about something the Yankees had done recently, some trade, some very in the weeds baseball thing. And I remember saying, you know, man, I just don't know. I don't follow it like that. I just like going to the games. And I remember saying, I don't follow it like that. And he just gave up on me. This guy was getting in fights with everyone. And I saw, like, he was trying to get a fight. And by saying, I don't follow it like that, he couldn't even, it was, I've never forgotten it.
Some element of reading him to his core too. It is pretty sassy because it's like you're saying like that in a powerful way that makes him self-analyze of like, why am I asking this stranger about a trade? Like, what the fuck? I'm broken. And you bring up something slightly off topic, but something I think about a lot. The exciting thing about sports fandom is, it's like the last bastion of like, well, go fuck yourself, okay? And like, and it's like still kind of positive. And there's something fun about that. And then there's just guys who ruin that vibe. Like, it's like, I would love to see be at a Giants game and someone has a Raider, like whatever they're playing. Like, that's that fun rivalry happens. And you're like, this is the last bastion of like, all right, asshole, this one's yours, you know? And then people who just take that like one notch too far and you're like, God damn, like, I don't need to get punched. But if I'm wearing a Yankees hat at an Orioles game, I hope people turn to me when the Orioles get a home run and give me the thumbs down. You know, like that's like the fun. And then there's just a guy always a guy who just takes it a touch too far and is like, you're here for, you have anger that's displaced and put for some reason onto the pinstripes, bro.
I went to a different Orioles game at Yankee Stadium, and I remember, and this one, and I was worried because it was the last time this guy got into it. I was like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And all that happens is that, like, every sort of vendor I go to, they go, like, all right, have a nice day. And then they see my hat and they go, actually, don't have a nice day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's perfect.
And it was always like, it was a very, like, verbal, like, oh, hey, I hope you have a bad day, but, you know, have a good one. You know, but it was like, it was like really every vendor I went to. And it was so, after that last experience, I was really expecting people to be more aggressive instead of this very like, hey, man, fuck you. I hope you have a really bad time today. But see you later.
Yeah, you know? Here's your nachos, sir. Yeah.
Also, I went to a Wizards game at the Nets Stadium, and different types of fandom, but the Wizards were losing so bad. Every time I like made a loud yell for the team in a way that was in any way like, we got the next one, guys. Like, it's coming around. It's coming around. You just make friends by like, you made friends by sort of being, I know I'm losing, but you guys know I have to be like the performance space of the arena, of being in an arena is crazy to me.
It's so
like everyone's so visible.
You saying, like, in this method, you're, like, cheering for the Nets, but conveying that you're a Wizards fan is, like, it's, like, a weird a needle that you're threading because you're, like, I'm currently, it's, like, self-effacing in a way that fandom, like, appreciates. And basketball feels like more than any other live sports, you feel fully on display. Like, it's can, like, make eye contact with someone across the court and be like, there's that Orioles fan.
Yeah. No, and what's fun is when you're, like, a fan of the opposing team in this stadium, the power, and because, you know, you're always trying to I'm always trying to get a laugh somehow.
Yeah.
And what I learned is when you're at a stadium like that, and the winning team or the home team does something well, just going, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because what you're saying is like you're putting yourself in the oh no, James Bond escaped. Oh no, Superman is here to break up. You know, like you're saying something technically antagonistic to what's going on, but really you're putting yourself under it. You're making yourself and people love that shit. Or like overly excited when when the Wizards are super down and something stupid happens. Like that's always a winner of like, there we go, boys. That's exactly what we're looking for. Nice holding on first down. Let's go, team. Yeah. Like
they make the first basket in like 5 minutes and you go like, see, we're coming back.
Here it is.
We're coming back. You
know? Rally caps, boys. Rally caps. Here it comes.
I was really into the NBA as a kid. That's how I made friends, basketball. Cause I like learned, well, this weaves into stuff actually. When I was a kid, I was very solitude. I liked to pretend to be animals a lot and like play, pretend a lot. And
that was one of the other, titles, the subjects you threw out in addition to looking at birds was pretending to be animals. And
yeah,
I was like,
this
is primal and raw and I'm here for it.
I had like a way to track that through a bunch of stuff and maybe it will fall back in, but like, you know, I played pretend a lot as a kid, in the exclusion of making friends, and basketball was a way for me to like connect with other boys. Basically it was like A, liking basketball, but then B, like being on the court, figuring out that you could be a certain type just by your body type. You were I'm a forward or a center, and that's how I fit in with this group. It did like teach me social awareness, how you fit in with a group of people. Like, I have my role here. Oh, I'm not a great scorer, but I can get a lot of rebounds. So that means I'm valued to this group of like five or six boys. It was like very important to me. Then like I got older and stopped caring and got back into the NBA during COVID because it was on, you know, the bubble was on
right.
All the time. And like I was like, why did I stop watching this? I'm loving this so much. And I started listening to podcasts and reading sports journals. And then like step by step, we saw those sports fans that you're talking about. I was like, why did I stop watching? This is so much fun. Oh, why is this guy being so rude to this one player? This guy's being really rude. There's a culture around people being really rude to Russell Westbrook. He seems nice. You know, like there's like, I felt so naive because I stepped back and being like, I can't believe I ever was turned astray. And I was like, oh, I forgot some of the worst people in the world make this their entire emotional lives.
God, I could write a fucking thesis on how other people, other fans of things ruin my things that I'm fans of, like improv, movies, comics, like all the shit that I loved. Just looking to my left and right and seeing the fans I'm amongst has like, arguably, I'm like, I have a distinct memory. I host an action movie podcast. I'm a big movie fan. Go to the movies all the time. I live in LA. It's very movie bro haven. I was there seeing some movie with my buddy Ben Rogers. The Tenet trailer played. This is way back pre-pandemic, obviously. And the Tenet trailer played, and I just look at Raj and I'm like, oh, I'm stoked for this movie. But two guys in front of us turn and fucking high five and say like, fucking Nolan or something like that. And I looked at him, I'm like, that makes me just want to not see the movie, dude. And he's like, what's wrong with us? Also, that like they weren't even being like rude either. It was like, and that's when you start realizing, am I policing how other people are fans of things? Rude behavior is one thing, but I find myself getting caught up in like, we pumped the brakes. This is like, you're too much of a fan. It's creeping me out.
Yeah, it's hard because I feel like there's versions of being healthy about that and versions of letting it really affect enjoying something that you enjoy. And that's like, and that's a hard line to cross. Like, I remember I was a big X-Men fan. I was really into the comics and a lot of like the early comics. And I like got really obsessive about reading all the old stuff.
Let me jam in real quick here because I too, and I think I learned everything I know about teams from like X-Men. And I think that's why I've gravitated towards sketch group, improv, D&D, even sports feels like, and like earlier when you were saying, oh, I'm a forward, I'm a center, I'll stand over here. I almost said that, and it makes you feel like the X-Man. You're like, I'm the big, fat, strong guy. I'm Colossus, so I have to play left guard. He's fast and agile, so he's Nightcrawler, the tailback. And like, we work well together, but we each have our strengths and our weaknesses. And like, that helped me like unpack social structure. So I just want to smash these two ideas together for you.
Oh, I mean, that was true too. Oh, Nightcrawler, he's like, he's kind of a freak, but he's funny and nice and everyone likes him. So even though I'm kind of a freak, maybe everyone can like me if I'm a little fun. Like that was...
Well, yeah, especially X-Men, because it is a gathering of freaks and you're like, I feel like a freak. Me and all my friends are freaks, but we have fun and shit together. That's so sick, you know? And it's like, X-Men really spoke to me when I was young. And I'm like a white, straight, middle-class, blue-collar kid from New York. I'm like, there's nothing on paper weird about me, but I was from an era where I was one of the weirdest kids in my school, being like as basic as I fucking am here. And X-Men spoke to me so much. So when you said that, it just triggered a whole shit ton of memories.
I mean, that stuff, I mean, you know, it's also very upset. It's also very, how do these things fit? What are the variations? I mean, this is also burning too. What are the variations of things and how do they connect and relate to each other? And which ones can you observe and which ones do you like? And which ones, what are the slight variations of this? Oh, there's different types of strong guys. Oh, there's different types of psychics. There's different types of, Betsy Braddock has like a telepathy or, but not, wait, you know what I mean? She can make the
Psy Blade, but
the
Psy
Blade.
She can't like read minds.
Yes. Or something like that. You know, like there's all those different versions of it.
Well, now we're touching on something else that maybe is not what you're talking about, but like, I know you're a tabletopper as well. So like rules and like,
sure,
like not exactly rules, but world rules, like X-Men, that shit worked on me so much of like, well, so when like a character like Longshot you first read about and it's like, whoa, how does he have control over luck? It's a gate. It's a rule. It's a power I can't understand. And understanding all that, it like was always so intriguing to me. And understanding people's limitations and who could help with what and who could do what, like that shit all triggered me all the time.
I always think about, even now, when it's like, Nightcrawler can only teleport to a place he sees, and if he goes with somebody else, it's really hard. It hurts them. And it's also really hard for him too. Like, that's such a cool limitation. Even in the movie, in the Wolverine, in the first X-Men movie, it hurts when his claws come out. Oh, that's right. Like, that is a limitation. That means he's like enduring something to do his cool thing. That's exciting. Phoenix getting out of control. That's like scary. That's like, oh, you
Rogue unable to touch anyone without her claws. You know, like that shit all hit. And not to mention, I had an insane crush on Rogue. That's neither here nor there. That's just something I've always been dealing with.
Sure. I understand. I had a crush on Mystique. It was she's blue. That's cool.
Very, very cool.
But I mean, I guess what I was saying is that I got I watched those X. No, please.
Fucking one of the best theme songs to a show ever.
Yeah, one of the coolest things I've ever heard is that. That's very cool.
So cool.
But I got, when the movies came out, loved the first X-Men, loved the second X-Men. The third one was like a miss for me. And I think culturally is agreed to be a miss, but I'm not here to yuck anyone's yum if they liked it. Then the next one, I forget what it was. There was a next one that came out that I remember specifically being like, I think these movies aren't for me. Where I was like, I think I care too much about these characters, where I'm going into these movies and I'm getting mad. I'm getting mad because these characters aren't the way I see these characters. And it felt, I mean, I give myself credit for, in this instance, being like mature about it, where it's like, I can't go into these movies and get mad. That's not fair to me. That's not fair to the movie. That's not fair to people who like the movie. I think I just shouldn't watch the X-Men movies because I'm going to get mad in a way that like isn't actually about the art of it at all.
Right,
and now
right.
I feel a little more open to it now, but still with most comic book movies, I have a similar feeling of like, I'm going to enjoy it only to a certain point until it crosses my internal desires for these characters. And that's just not fair to anyone, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, it is like there is like an element of growing up in there where you're like, okay, they're not for me. And because I distinctly had a moment where I was like, if I told like 12-year-old Gabrus, there's two Star Wars movies and two Marvel movies coming out every year and you're grown up and you're annoyed by them, he'd be like, why? Like, they're your favorite thing. And I'd be like, I know, but it's not reaching the heights I want. And they're like, then why are you annoyed? Shouldn't you at least just be like quietly disappointed? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's probably the right thing is to go in going, it's not the comics I grew up on, but it is cool to see Thor. Like, that should just be where my brain is at. But instead, I'm like, this is the disassembling of the modern cinema. And I'm like, you know what? Just fucking drop it, man. Don't go or go. Like, just make the fucking choice. It's so easy. It's so easy to, like, police your own fandom, other people's fandom. Like, and then you're like, all I'm doing is guaranteeing that none of us are enjoying this. Like, and I'm making it worse on myself. I'm making my experience worse by these weird choices.
So that's true, though I will also say that if you went to yourself as a kid and said, like, they're like, what are you talking about? Why? That's amazing. And you go like, yeah, but they did this thing with that character you like. I bet you young you would be like, well, they can't do that. Right, like, right. No, they kept on doing that. No, but they can't do that.
Right, know, like, exactly.
But, you know, I do think that does connect to, like, gaming and D&D stuff, because I do feel like that is, because there is, like, a sort of pick-your-own version of how you want this stuff to be done, and now there's so much media where these different creators have picked their own versions of how they like stuff to be done, and that is refracted to audiences who participate in the thing themselves where they pick their own version of how things are be done. I do think there is a version of people at least listening to gaming media that is a lot like sports fandom, where it is like, because it's very much like, you know, these people do, I mean, first there's equality. You want to see people do stuff well, and so your version, and when you see people doing well, like, well, these people are the best at this thing, or these people are the best at this thing, but you also want to see, like, oh, well, this is my favorite team because I like how they play with each other. This is my favorite era of the X-Men because these characters and how they interact. And there's something, right, like, primally good about the way these characters, you know, this was a X-Men in the school, for me, is better than X-Men in space, because I think X-Men should always be in a school. So this one's in a school, so it's a better, like...
Right,
and
right.
That, and the way that, but the way that that becomes articulated in, like, social media, or just, like, how people talk about, you know, the versions of the games they like, the types of teams they like, the types of media that they like, it becomes very sports fandom where it's like, these are my guys, or these are my people, you know,
right,
these are my,
yeah,
this is my team.
Right.
And they're like, well, what about when your team did this? Like, yeah, but that was only one time the team did this, and they actually got better by doing the team. You know, it's like, there is a sort of sports, athletic, team, fandom. And that's simply because, I mean, you can be a fan of a sport and participate in the sport too. You can be a fan of these games and participate in the games yourself.
Well, there's also even less, because of the subjectivity of the kind of stuff we're talking about now, it's even like the barrier between the guy screaming, fucking play some defense at a basketball. He can't join the NBA. He can go play with the basketball with his friends, but with like tabletop gaming fandom or any of that, like, you almost can do that.
Oh, yeah. You definitely,
and you're like,
can.
Why aren't you dual wielding as a ranger? And it's like, well, I should just dual wield as a ranger. Or it should be, hey, if I want to tune in to these people playing tabletop, maybe I should just be okay with whatever they choose to wield. You know, I'll root for them to win and have fun and all that. But I don't really have, like, I shouldn't have that level of stakes. I shouldn't let, or at least I shouldn't let it negatively affect my enjoyment.
Yeah, well, it's been a learning experience for me because, you know, so I'm a cast member in the podcast Rude Tales of Magic on the HeadGum Network, and also These Those Stars of Space, which is sort of a Lasers and Feelings type game is what it is, while the other ones is very extremely loosely Dungeons and Dragons. But I didn't play these games before really making the podcast, you know?
Oh, fun.
I had done some Vampire the Masquerade in high school.
Of course. Everyone experiments.
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, me being a Malkavian in high school is like, they're crazy. They're like, you know, they're so mad, but they actually tell the truth. That was very into that. But I didn't really play these games until, we did a few sessions before we started recording, but basically since I started recording, and I really just was treating it as an improv performance exercise and really had to be told to learn the rules. and be like, you know, because I remember Branson was like, you don't have to, just come play and we'll figure out the rules in real time. And I was like, okay, cool. And then eventually he's like, you gotta learn the rules, man. You're like, we it's taking too much editing. Like, you have to learn the rules. So like, all right, like, fine, I'll learn the rules.
Imagine getting past the ball in basketball and being like, all right, so what am I allowed to do with this here? And it's like, all right, man, we love having you here, but you gotta learn dribbling and you gotta learn.
Yes, basically, which is like, you know, I can't apologize for it. It's like what I'm into for this. So it's like, that's I'm into role play. I'm into acting. I'm into improv. I'm into loosely fantasy. And so learning about the rules and then realizing how much that mattered to different people was a real learning curve for me. Cause I was like, I didn't care. You know, like, I just wanted to play pretend. If we took out the roles and just like, we're doing a bat, that was, you know, that's what I would be there for.
Right.
And as time has gone by, I've really learned to like, oh, what, how exciting this is, what this means for storytelling, what this means for group think and like group dynamics. I've been won over by what that means. And for people who come from a different perspective than I do, where like those rules and those mechanisms and even like the sort of the pastiche of the fantasy genre creates such a more open and like heartfelt improvisation that can happen in like a long form for many people because of those of like just that narrowing process of like you can trust on these things to sort of get through it. I've really become like opened to how exciting and creative this gaming can be, but it was also never the reason I got into it. And I still struggle when I'm participating in like conversations about macro gaming stuff to be like, well, I don't know. You know, like I have a different kind of an investment, you know, which is,
that's interesting. Cause I was talking about something about this recently. We're talking about the rules and there's something about the rules that are freeing for some people and seemingly limiting for other people. Like where they're like, and it's like, if you like, we had like extended conversation about it. It's like, well, if there are rules to life, and it's like, no, there's not. You can literally do whatever you want. It's like, you could, but then you would have like people around you would have less fun. So Matt, carry that over to D&D. And then the main thing someone one time said is like, yes, without rails, you can go anywhere, but with rails, you can go pretty fast, safely in one direction. And you're like, oh yeah, that kind of helps. Like giving it rails gives it like a narrative, or you know, gives you a driving force. The thing I hate about when people's entire enjoyment of the game, no matter what the game is now, but I'm still talking tabletop, but you could blow this out to RPGs, board games, anything. When people use the rules and like loophole the rules and harness the rules to like break the game in a way that's positively breaking the game for them to win or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, just like used to play Diablo with my friend JP, and we always joked. He like broke every game we played. We were diehard Star Wars customizable card game kids. Like, we were obsessed with that game. And my buddy JP just made a Dagobah deck that was the least fun way to play, but would always practically win. And it was like, he's like, this rules. And I'm like, this is so unfun, dude. And he's like, no, this is how you play the game. It's within the rules. And I'm like, okay, now we need to start talking about like the spirit of the rules and the spirit of the game. But then there are other people who are like, ah, fuck it. Da, da, da. And you're like, I grew up loving the rules because I love the world. I love knowing, like, I love hearing like, oh shit, kobolds, those are only D4 hit points. We should be Gucci. You know, like, I like knowing stuff like that. But now when I play, I'm purely coming at it like, I exclusively when I play now, also it's like recorded for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, all right, you're not going to catch me really digging in on the rules here. You're going to catch me going, let's keep it entertaining, folks. We're making a product. We're making a show. And then I'll play, but then I'm going to mostly be thinking about that. I'm going to be making choices that I think are funny rather than like, we need to rescue this princess. That is going to be so not as paramount as it used to be for me now that we're recording and putting it out for for entertainment purposes.
Yeah. And like, you know, and I will say we've all been thrilled by the moment when someone's like, okay, well, this happens to you. And then someone's like, but wait, actually, I do have this thing. And you did say that this thing does this thing before. And they're like,
right.
Okay, I did. But in this situation, everyone's like, I know, but that did. but you did say, okay, sure. Okay, well, that's sort of
actually, dodge does get added to breath weapon, and you're like, oh, okay, that's actually pretty fucking cool or whatever. You know, like, you find that thing where you're like, or someone, especially if someone else brings it up, hey, Tim, don't you have the necklace of blink or whatever? Maybe now would be a time to you have to charge a day or whatever. And you're like, yes, that would be perfect.
It is. I mean, I guess it's like, it's what is fun is a status negotiation. What is fun is a status swap, you know? And so if rules can help with that in a way that is dramatic, then it's fun, you know, where it's like, here's what's happening. Actually, my friend, it's not happening because this thing that I have that you know about is something that I'm using right now. This is but I was in control and now you're in control. What? I mean, I love a status switch. That's like the best part about improv is playing with status, right. I think. You know? But it is true. I feel like, you know, when I started doing improv, I was really resentful of rules. I was really, I don't think I was a great improv student, even though I think I was good at improv. I mean, I'll say it. Anyone who knew me at the time can tell me if I'm wrong. But like,
wow, we're getting, I'm getting tons of messages right now. People disagree. They said you were all, no, okay. I'm sorry, this is a live Twitch. I should have told you that.
Yeah, but that's actually cool because I've always liked lists of my foes. So
now we've got a screenshot of everyone I have to hunt down one by one.
But like, I really resented it. I really resented the idea that I had to do things a certain way. I really resented if a teacher told me why something I did was wrong and didn't feel wrong. You know, like you know, and in retrospect, I think I can give myself the grace of being like, you know, there's a healthy amount of you can't tell me what to do if I feel inspiration that I think is artistic.
Hold on,
you know,
to like, forever, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I think that some of the best stuff that I make now is because of that, a bit of that impulse, you know? Conversely, I think some of the stuff that I lament about myself now is because I couldn't just, like, take a note and be like, well, maybe just bow to this thing for a little while and maybe take your ego out of what this thing is and, like, if you follow these rules, you don't know what is going to happen to you as a creator, as a person, as a skill, right. As a character. How can your skill set improve by doing that stuff? It's like, the thing I always hated was them was like, for the UCB style of like, say the, like name the game, you know, like I just like, I wanted to be coy. I wanted to be real life. I wanted it to be like natural, you know? And just like, if you say the thing that's happening, I'm like, but that's so not real. That's so fake. And then to slowly realize that by saying the thing the audience got with you,
right? Like, maybe even like, your scene partner who wasn't fully aware either. Yeah.
Yeah. And like that wins you. I'm like, oh, well that like, that really helps. That
it
really
makes the
helps.
Scene funnier by or the reactions are more what you're looking for. And you're like, oh shit, I didn't need it. Dude, you're touching on a lot of stuff that means a lot to me. Longtime improv student and teacher here. And I always, like, I was not a good student at all, but I was still always afraid to get in trouble. So I always pushed the limits of what I could do in the pre-improv. But then even once I got to improv, I'm like, well, here are the rules, but how can I do everything I want to do and play by the rules? And that gave me, like, a special power, I think, a little bit, where I was like, okay, I have the yes hand. Okay, we should be peas in a pod here. I should be the voice of reason here.
Yeah,
and like, but how can I maximize my enjoyment out of? And then I remember later on in classes just having like a grown-up moment where I said to myself, I paid for this class. Like I'm taking a class. Like, and I maybe disagree with what I'm being taught, but I am choosing to be here. I don't have to be here. I could go anywhere else and not yes and. But will I get the stage time? Will I get the feeling I'm getting that? No. Like, that was like a huge leap for me. And now that's helped me so much in my 40s now where I'm just like, yeah, I can show up somewhere and buy the ticket, take the ride, and then after the fact go, not for me, you know what I mean? But while I'm here, I decided to go to the haunted house. I'll play along with the rules of the haunted house. You know, like there's something, and that was a adult decision. I started taking UCB classes at like 20 years old. So I was, you know, 7 years in before I started to think maybe I should start taking this seriously or like a grown up.
Well, but it seems like just by taking the, it seems like you did take the challenge. You're like, I am taking the challenge of what they're telling me, and I'm going to treat it very seriously. I'm going to find a way to express myself through it. I think that's the healthiest way to do it. You know, like, right. I think I started doing stand up because I think like I truly, I'm being both harder on my past self than I think is fair. But I do, it's hard not to see where you feel like you made a mistake, or, you know, hard not to see where you like could have been more mature. And I do feel like I started doing stand up because I knew that something in the improv space, like I wasn't getting my juice. You know what I mean? Like there seems to be like the way I really want to be on stage, I have to do something different here. Which, and then once I realized that, it was a lot more fun to be like, oh, improv is like actually not a space for me to be creative. It's a space for me to be present. You know, it's a space to me to be like of service, you know? And I think that was really helpful for me. And then stand up became a place of like, well, here I can force an audience to listen to my like meanderings. You know, like I can be really strange and make it work. And if I don't, I'm gonna really suffer. And that suffering is all on me. And I can't play the game.
You're not part
of like,
a group there, so you're not like bringing anyone down or, you know, making anyone feel unheard or anything like that. You're just,
Or being like, oh, well, they did well and I did bad. Or like, that wasn't bad, but they got it wrong. Like, I did a thing and they just didn't support. You know, like, that was just not a healthy way to be. And I think, like, stand up. But no, when I suffer, I suffer. And I really can learn. And that was a challenge I did take. Was like, oh, how do I learn from that? Okay, that bombed. But this is funny. Let's figure it out. And then when you make it work, it's like, well, then I did that. Rather than improv, where I feel like when I did well, I was just like, well, I'm a god. I did it. I accessed
There's too many excuses when it fails, because it's so easy to not take, like, when improv fails, you're like, crowd was off, suggestion sucked, we didn't really establish where we were, my scene partner seemed to not be, you know, like, that guy walked on and fucking blew it, or, you know, I shouldn't have walked on, I was being too convoluted. But when you do stand up and bomb, you're like, okay, you didn't have a joke for that. Like, it turns out that thing you thought was funny, you need to take another fucking look at, bro.
Or even just being like, I should have said it slower. Like, yes! I should have paused. You know, like that stuff, that got pretty addictive when you're like, because then even if you do really well, you're like, well, I did it right this time. Or you can be like, well, that audience was ready for me because the person before me was so funny in a different way. So when I came on, it was very, it feels like even though you are alone, there's something that for me that got a lot more, I felt like I'm more humble about it, because it felt like I could see what was happening rather than improv, which is like, this is just a grand mystery of like, and you can like go with the right intentions and go with the right, you know, attitude.
Right.
And go
but
with
once
the right
it's
kind of,
and ideally once it's kind of happening, you're just in the pocket existing in an improv show. And like in stand up, it's easy to like, you know, you're like thinking about what you're supposed to say right before you go on. It's not usually 25 minutes. Like, you know, it's frequently like only for 10 and you're like, shit, we have to get to it. You can have like an improv show can start with like 8 minutes of bad comedy and you're like, we could still pull this out. But if you're 8 minutes into a stand-up set that isn't working, you're like, oh, motherfucker, this hurts. Like, I got 4 minutes to get one laugh. My only hope is to say, man, this sucks, huh? And just get people on board that way.
Which is a thrill, I think. I do think, which is like, I feel a little, there's something, there's something about failing like that alone and being like, I had to do it, which is like, I don't know. I'm not saying I like bombing. I don't like it. But it did, there's like, it felt very like, yes, it was bad, but I can work, I can figure it out. And I do think with improv, it's like, well, I'm either a god or the scum of the earth. And I didn't know how to like navigate healthily within those spaces.
Also, if you can handle bombing, if you bomb and it doesn't destroy you, all of a sudden, like, you're like, okay, so I can bomb.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
feels like that's weirdly freeing too, because you're so, then you're like, well, I'll try this. What if I bomb? Hey, you've bombed. You're alive. It didn't fucking, like, no one even brought it up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you never heard about it again, except for your own head. And, like, that's a victory in and of itself, too, with, like, once you can bomb and know that there is another day of comedy on the other side, all of a sudden you're like, okay, it's not the end of my world bombing, you know? But like, there's something about when improv, if you feel like you did bad, you brought other people down too.
Yes.
Like, and if you, yeah, if you just do bad doing stand up, you're like, that's on you, asshole.
Oh yeah. And then with gaming too, even where it's like, well, if you know, it's like, if you get a bad, if your character does poorly, if you're going to die, if you're going to die in the game, like, cool. You know, like, that's
right.
Cool. Like, it's cool to fail. It's cool to, it's fun to fail. It's like,
it takes a lot. It takes a lot of like ego supplanting and like learning that like you could be very successful by losing or being low status. Like, it does take a moment to like it takes some time to realize that and be like, oh, you could be a millionaire by playing a fucking loser. Like, you yeah. know, like, you could be an idiot and make, you know, like, there's something, it's not, success isn't like status. It's not the same in art. So there's something yeah. like, there's something powerfully freeing about that. The second you're like, oh yeah, I don't have to be cool up here. I don't have to be, I don't even have to be liked. If my end goal is just getting them to laugh, I don't have to be liked. And all of a sudden you're like, all the normal stuff that goes in your head psychologically when you're engaging with other people of like, do they hate me? Like, the going down to the binary of like, am I getting laughs? Do I, maybe you do need them to like you for laughs, but maybe you, then you learn a shortcut to get people to like you, you know, like there's something
yeah,
yeah. like powerful about being free of like what you think. You don't like learning. You don't need to win. Like when you, here's the perfect example. There's been like in the last 15 years, maybe 20 years, there's been like a proliferation of content, comedy content that's game based, whether it's like
yeah.
what you guys are doing at Rude Tales, what College Humor is doing with Never Have I Ever and all these
yeah.
like everyone's doing like these like we performatively play Monopoly and it's funny and you watch it because it's funny. Doing those has broken my competitive spirit in a good way.
Mm.
In that I used to want to win all the time, like bar trivia, it killed me to lose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Killed me to lose. Actually, the first time I played it. But down the road, when you realize winning or losing, we all get paid the $200 for
yeah.
being here or whatever,
yeah, yeah.
and it's like, oh, there's no real prizes. And then it's like, well, you want to win, but when that want to win vibe changes to you want to put on a good show. Now you're fucking singing. Now you're in like a fucking, you're in the, I'm going to bring it back to our original topic. Now you're in the catbird seat.
Ooh.
Bird.
Bird.
I don't know what the expression catbird seat means at all. I've never seen a catbird seat. Haven't heard it in a long time. Don't know what made my brain go there, but it went there. But it's like, once you're like, oh shit, losing is required for this to be truly funny. Or like me winning is not important for this. Like, that's a fucking freeing fucking thing in a way. And then if you can carry that on with you in life, I have yet to do that. I'm still, you know.
Yeah, no, I can't
taking
do that.
Auditions.
I mean, I
hyper
can't do that.
Personal. No.
That's my
I'm
life.
I'm taking every rejection insanely personal despite having multiple a week due to my career choices. It's like, but the power is there. The power lies in like, it's just about the fucking end result.
Well, I'll say that, like, one thing about that I do think does carry in your life in a way that is a little, how do I say this? It's like, because of course, yeah, like, I think about my failures all the time, I feel failures all the time, but there are moments where it's like, and it's usually when I'm at a party with people I don't know all well, and there's different social environments, and, like, I don't know if this is actually like a very, like masculine thing or this like a weird guy thing. I don't want to gender it like that, but it's usually I usually find this in very like literary guy spaces where there is like a group of literary guys and one person is very loud and they are sort of like doing a almost rehearsed like monologue
spiel.
About
yeah
a spiel, you know, that like you can just sort of tell. And then you're sort of out of the space, and so you, like, sort of, like, jump into it for a second, and it disorients them. And you can tell, see them get mad at you for a second, and you're like, and then you handle that with, and then it's like, sorry, I didn't know that you needed to say that whole thing. I guess I'll stay back again. Do you know what I'm talking? Have you been in a space like this? I don't know if I can describe this very well.
There's I might be the other guy. I might.
Oh, really?
No, I'm never mad when people interrupt, but I am the loud, oh shit, Gabrus is like on story three in a row. Let me jump in there. But I'm never mad at, but I totally understand what you're, and that's when you realize you're like, am I supposed to give this person this time? Like, I guess like, this is like, I guess I come back when they're done. I guess I hang loose and say, that was cool. Yeah.
But then also if you say something a little like self-effacing in that moment and it works, then right. They're like, how'd you can't do that. And you're like, well, I don't care.
Right. I'm trying to escape this, man. And now you've got me trapped in there. Like, whoa, sorry, didn't realize it was story time with Tim Platt. And then you're like, hey, asshole. And you're like, okay, I'm sorry, I'm in too deep now.
Well, it's kind of like with the sports fandom, too. It's like, I'm just here to enjoy myself. I didn't realize there was sort of like a rule. I rooted for the wrong team here. I'm wearing the wrong thing. Like,
yeah.
And you're mad, but I'm cool with it. Like, there is power. I've learned in like in bombing and learning how to like, play in a low status position, there are some social moments where you suddenly realize that you are comfortable in a way that somebody else isn't, and it's because they are suddenly perceiving your low status as like a little more effective than their high status, you know. Yeah. What I mean,
I think older people like my age, 40s and up, would understand that a little bit from a work perspective. As I meet more and more people in my field, the field of entertainment, who kind of have always been a creator, like from the jump, and have not didn't grind for like 3 years as a PA or struggling taking improv classes or dying for stage time and like working shit entertainment jobs for, you know, writing for fucking non-union, dumb fucking digital shows. Like, all this stuff that like you got hardened at, but also grew past. But you have that experience of being the fucking runt, the lowest person on the lowest rung or whatever. And then when your life butts up with someone who's never been like that before, and you don't realize, like, I have peers. I'm just dodging every specific here to save my ass. I have peers that are just like, they've been successful from the jump, more or less, some variation of that, or never really had to struggle due to some head start they had in life. And like watching them like engage with the world versus me engage with the world, I'm like, oh, you've never had to just shut the fuck up. Like, you've never had to just be like, well, I guess we'll just eke past this and get out of here. You know, like, and seeing that, and I think there's a little bit like, being low status and even performatively for comedy will help you in life in a situation where you're like, well, I'm going to get out of this coffee shop interaction that is too aggressive for me by playing low status. Because high status will activate this person I'm engaged with that I'm trying to get the fuck away from. And all of a sudden, I'm a piece of shit and I'm out of here. And they're like, whoa, you're... And like, and just being able to do that. And then I just have friends, and my wife has friends that just are incapable of being like, oh, I always joke, like, I had an alcoholic father, so I can get out of any interaction I don't want to be in. Like, I am like super powerful. I've, since the age of like six, I've been like, okay, Dad, I got to go do homework, something I never want to do, but just so I don't have to talk to you about this story that we're on a fucking loop about, or you're angry about this bullshit. So that skill set carried me through life. I just don't think people have, I think people are like, wait, how come I am not just fully in control of this moment? And like getting that power will it makes you a bit more of a survivor.
I think so. Should we talk about birds at all? Is this?
Yeah, let's get into looking at birds. We're coming down the home stretch here at the end. Let's talk a little bit about how does I'm a big observer of nature as someone who camps and goes to the beach.
Oh, cool.
Never specifically birds. Love animals. Saw a rattlesnake on a hike today in Griffith Park, and it really scared me.
One of my favorite snakes.
Yeah. Top five for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely top five. I mean, I got into it. I was always very big into nature. I was very into lizards and reptiles and stuff like that when I was a kid. I wasn't super into birds in that way. But then I went on tour with a children's play with Branson Reese and Katie Skelton and Rachel Winitsky. We were doing it for the Story Pirates, and we were going all down the West Coast. It was a really cool tour. It was a really great time with great people. And I just like suddenly I'd never been on tour before, and I suddenly realized like, if I just pay attention to the way birds are different in every city that we go to, that's like something to hold on to in terms of like tracking. You know, touring can be a blur, and that was my first time doing it. And I felt a little like, I'm going to all these places, I don't really know what's happening, but like, oh, these birds look different than these ones. You know, this is like the, you know, the Pacific Northwest birds versus like the sort of the Nevada bird, like that. And that just got me paying attention a little bit more. And then I just started like trying to look closer. And then my friend, who's she's like an ecologist, and she was like, oh yeah, birding means you can be a naturalist anywhere in the world. Because even in the city, there's birds. Even everywhere you are.
Right. Oh yeah, you could be at sea and there's birds. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like that, like, I don't know, as like a kid who was really into nature and like loved it, but didn't really like, I camped, but didn't really, I'm not really a survivalist type of person. I like, that just felt, oh, a way to access appreciating nature in a way that works. It can be a bit obsessive. You can sort of collect stuff. You, like everything we're saying with like sports and comics, it's like you're seeing different variations of stuff rather than being a sort of outdoorsman in that way. That is cool. I just like don't have that skill set. And then during COVID, you're stuck in the same spot, and like what was changing, but like these flutterings outside and these seasonal changes. And just by paying attention, I was like suddenly seeing more about the world around me, and that was pretty addictive and exciting. And like I got, you know, binoculars, and now I go out birding when I can in the morning, or when I go on vacation or go to a new spot, I'll bring my binoculars and try to find a space to go out into a natural spot just to see what's around. And it's just become very like obsessive a little bit, but it's also like very like soothing. It's like my way of being out. I mean, I go for runs. I like runs, but like, it's sort of like a way to be outside and not be plugged in and still be sort of very connected. And like a reason, right. And there's like a reason, you know?
Yeah, it's very, as I get older, and the pandemic really spoke to me on this, it's like finding a thing that brings you outdoors in life, especially, I mean, I'm sure there are people listening who like work outdoors for a living and are like, fuck you, man. But for a lot of us, yeah, who are trapped at computers or on Zooms or at shows at night, like, it's easy, like, and living in the city, it's like easy to be like, oh, I'm like only outside when I'm walking to the subway or something. I'm, yeah, like, I'm only waiting till March to like drink a beer al fresco, and that counts as being outdoors or whatever. Yeah. And then you're like, oh shit, no, I need, like, there's a power in it. And I found it in the pandemic because I needed to get out of my apartment. My wife was on Zooms all the time. Things were a little limited for me, so I needed to get the fuck out frequently. So I started walking all the time. My friends were camping. I'm like, oh, I'll try camping. That became very exciting for me.
Cool.
And then it's like, whatever brings you outside, is it surfing? Is it walking? Is it birding? Is it skateboarding? Is it fucking, you know, I like to go, like, the thing I got into in the pandemic was walking to all my errands. Be like, I have to go to CVS. Okay, well, this is going to take me 3.5 hours because I'm going to go to the far one and do this. And it's like, whatever it takes, it's the dose, the prescription of getting outdoors. When people say shit like touch grass, I know that's become like sort of like a shorthand meme kind of thing, but that shit is real. That shit is real. See grass. Look at trees. See animals. See, like, we have such an insane ecosystem. Now, even if you live in like a dense urban area, you've got fucking birds, you've got pigeons, you've got rodents, you've got bugs. Like, it's and fucking like wild out there.
And there's knowledge that comes from that that's pretty fun. Like, I remember in high school, my friend worked like, he like worked at like a tubing spa on the Shenandoah River. And, you know, and people got drunk. It was a very party job. But he learned so much about just like rivers, like, oh, these rivulets or the way rivers moved. He like suddenly learned a lot about, but like, oh, this is this type of flow and this type of, I don't know the words, you know?
Well, but yeah, it's not your knowledge. It's his, yeah, but that's fucking exciting. Yeah.
The way water moved in these different specific ways, which is the way I didn't understand. And I remember always being like so envious of knowledge like that, or people who like can look at trees and know the exact type of stuff. Like I don't, or know the right flowers or things like that. Like, that type of knowledge is, like, I just never, for somebody who loves nature, I never, like, had a practical way to build that stuff out except reading animal books, like reading zoo books. And like, you can know different versions of tigers that live around the world, but that's like literary knowledge. That's not sort of like being outdoors knowledge, you know, like that's collector knowledge. Like you can learn different type of animals from zoo books and see, but not really experience them as a part of natural, the natural world. You treat them as, you know, as collector's items, you know? And being in the birds, like, no, I see this bird this type of year. I only see this bird this type of year. Wait, the pigeon flies like that? It's actually cool how pigeons fly. I'm noticing that pigeons fly in a way that I think is cool just by paying attention to pigeons. Oh, that's that same bird, but that's a younger version of the bird. You can tell because of how their feathers have grown in. Like, that stuff suddenly feels like... And then you get to the point where it's like, oh, a bird flies by, and your friend's like, what's that? Oh, that was just a starling. How'd you tell? Oh, no, it's the shape. You know, like, that stuff feels like... You know, I always wanted to be, like, a wild animal. I always wanted to be a wild animal, and this is the closest I've ever gotten in terms of, like... Really,
well, it makes you feel like you're now an animal, part of the ecosystem. Yes. Like, it's not predatory or prey that you're not like survival. Like, whoa, I need to learn what the starlings are because they'll kill me. And you're not like, I need to learn what the starlings are because those are the edible ones. It's you knowing what the starlings are just makes you a facet of the ecosystem you exist in a way. And that's, there's something kind of, and like, it took me moving to Southern California and having some more crunchy type friends for them to be like, bro, we have this here, man. Like, you know, like, and it's like, it's crazy coyotes. That's dangerous for little dogs. And then you're like, but isn't that fucking cool that like, it's, we live like in the same world as that? Like, there are neighbors, and it's like, we had a mountain lion that like was famous in LA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like P-22, like there's stuff like that. That's just like, oh shit. Like, and today seeing the rattlesnake, forgetting that we were talking about birds later, I just saw the rattlesnake and I'm like, I've never been, I mean, maybe I have. I've never seen a rattlesnake that close up. That is scary. I'm 41 years old and work in comedy. Not frequently scared in life, with the exception of like the creeping esoteric dread of the end of all things, but like never acutely frightened too frequently in life. So that was like, I'm like, yes, I'm on a hiking trail in fucking expensive shoes and with like a backpack with my cell phone in it, but this is fucking raw. This felt real, you know, like that. I was like, I ran into a rattlesnake. I was not in fight or flight mode, but that was something that I never experienced before. And like, that's just a light engagement with nature. And that, yes, a starling flight, a rattlesnake, whatever you want, like a squirrel grabs a peanut out of your hand, a fucking bear steals your garbage. Like, these are like, you know, urban adjacent things that you can get involved in, but are still connect you to nature. Like, make you an element of nature. You are engaging directly. You are in part of the ecosystem.
They're your neighbors, man. They're your neighbors, you know? Like, I mean, I don't love rats. Like, I wouldn't pick, like, I'm not
a big
obsessed
rat
with rats. But I'm not scared of them when I see them. I read this book called Rats! ! And it's all about, like, the relationship between rats and New York City specifically. And one of the things in the book that was, really interesting, I always think about, is that like, there are so many rats underground, and there's like a lot more rats underground than we think. And if you see a rat on land, that's a weak rat, because that's a rat that couldn't make it underground, and underground is where the real rats live, you know, like, and that just sort of made me be, and like, look, I'm sure there could be diseased rats or like feral rat, you know, that's not nothing. That's something that you don't want to like go up and touch these wild animals. You don't know. But maybe be much less like, oh, rat runs by. I'm not scared. It's just, it's doing its thing. And it lives in New York. Like, it lives here too. It's not doing well. Because if it did, I wouldn't see it.
Right,
you know?
Right, like, right. It doesn't want to be around me. Like, I'm a predator. It's scared of me. I'm going to put a fucking trap down. I'm gonna fucking murk this thing. He doesn't want to engage with me, but he just wants a pizza and a flight of stairs, you know?
Yeah.
Just like all other New York rats.
Or even something like seeing a spider. Like, spiders freak me out. I don't like seeing spiders, but if I see one in my apartment, you know, I do think like, well, it's good that they're there. That means there's less flies,
right?
You know, like that little stuff like that, like, that's my neighbor. That's why I like, you know,
it's a readjustment of a perspective, but it really is freeing. And feeling like you're part of something bigger than you rather than everything like serves you. Like there's something like when you see the starling and you're like, me and this starling near this fire escape or whatever. And then you're like, yes, I am a wildly more advanced species, but zoom out another fucking a mile and me and the starling are the same fucking dot in a falcon's eye. You know what I mean? Like zoom, like whatever spiritual, you know, like we're just two beings. I can read and write and the starling can't, but we are just passing each other. Why am I better than that? That we're all, and then not to be the fucking, you know, SoCal libtard freak here, but like that appreciation of birds all of a sudden makes you appreciate Earth, makes you go like, what are we fucking doing here, man? Like the poor starlings. Like, yes, you could probably eat like 200 chickens a fucking week and not give a shit. But the second you like notice the beauty of a starling, you're like, are we fucking over the birds with all this? Like, what are we doing to the animals when we do blank? Like, what are we doing to nature when we do blank?
It's an access point to a certain type of environmentalism that I think is very connecting to me as a person who lives in one of the most urban environments and urbanized environments in the world. You know, like it is, and like if I go to like Greenwood Cemetery early in the morning to birdwatch, you know, there's something like activity of birds that are doing stuff that is not in my street, you know. And then I'm like, or if I go to, you know, go upstate or something like that, or quote unquote upstate to all you real upstate heads, you know.
Oh yeah, like, I'm from Long Island, so we called the Bronx upstate. My wife is from Westchester, and when my family says, "Are you going upstate for Christmas?" she gets so fucking angry, and we're like, "Baby, 130th is upstate to us."
Yeah, I think people just gotta accept that. You know, if we want to talk about language, we can, because I do think language is incredible. But upstate is it's a state of mind. But like going up there and suddenly seeing how birds interact in those, you know, wooded areas, that's also very healing, because you can sort of see it in a way, and the way you see them connect with each other or fly past each other or like interact with their space, it just suddenly, it's very humbling. I feel very like sort of at peace. I feel very like connected. I feel like very lucky to be able to see it, because I feel like I don't see it so often. And like, it does like clue me in that like there is stuff everywhere that isn't about, you know, my life. And, you know, I feel a little frou-frou talking about it like that, but I do feel that is like, I feel very connected to a greater thing there. And I feel like language begins to like sort of lose me as I'm in those spots. Cause I'm just like, even my voice, like, when I'm birding and I'll see something, like my voice changes in a way. It becomes very antisocial, not in the sense that it's like, you know, aggressive, but it suddenly becomes very like, I'm always on. You know, I'm always on when I'm talking to people. I can hear my voice be on. And suddenly if I'm looking, I see something like, oh my God, that's a yellow warbler. Oh my, I've never seen a yellow warbler before.
That's an inner monologue. It's not for people. It's not for public consumption, but you're there because that's where you are mentally. You're not in.
Yes.
You're not in public. You're in nature, which is like, even if you are at Greenwood Cemetery, you're activating. Something happened to me not too long ago. Someone said, well, are you like an outdoorsy guy? And I was like, this was before I started getting into camping. And I'm into car camping, you know, once every 2 months. So I'm not even like that outdoorsy. I'm just more outdoorsy than I was. But I'm like, no, I'm not really an outdoorsy guy. They were like, don't you go to the beach every week? And didn't you grow up going to the beach all day, every day, all summer long? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, the beach is... I had never felt the beach as nature to me, because I was a surfer. I worked as a lifeguard at the beach. We partied at the beach on days off, and the beach was like a family destination. And it was always like, and then I was like, I never saw the beach as nature. But then someone was like, it's fucking nature, man. And now I have like a whole nother tier of enjoyment when I go to the beach and I watch one bird dive for hours, or I watch one wave slowly crest over the sandbar and watch how it develops all the way down. Or I watch one parasailer go by and see like, wow, that's really like a long, like now I'm realizing like, oh, this whole time I've been in nature and just never felt. And then I bring that energy to the beach next time I go, and I'm enjoying it on levels that I haven't before. And then now I'm like, well, I'm outdoor. I can go camping. I fucking sat at the beach for 9 hours. I'm sure I can sit in the woods for 9 hours. Just growing up on Long Island, we didn't have like woods or hills or mountains or anything. So I never thought of it like that. Yeah. And I didn't have a dad who worked nights, so I never saw. So it wasn't like I had like a camping dad. So I just never had, that was never part of my life. And I just never realized it. But I'm like, the beach brings me such peace, you know? And I think it's just nostalgia and the ocean, and people are like, and it's nature. And it's like, and you're like, oh yeah, I just never connected. And then it meant so much. And then when you can find, and like all that to say, like thesis statement for me, talking about you watching, looking at birds, that's a way to find nature literally anywhere. Like,
oh yeah.
You, and like, you know, like if you fucking ladybug lands on your hand, and but you're in, you know, you're on the 33rd floor of the Empire State Building, that's a fucking dose of nature right there. Like that's like that's Earth. You know what
well,
I mean?
So
that's pretty weird.
I'll say two things about that. One, I've said recently that like if you are a fan of animals in the time of if you are a fan of animals in the time of climate change, you better learn to get into bugs. Because that's what we're, that's, they're going to be around. So like noticing that stuff.
If you're a fan of eating in the time of climate change, you better get into bugs as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. But about the beach, which is like a, you know, it's a shared space. I like, you know, I love the shorebirds. I love a pelican is one of my favorite birds, you know. The variations of gulls are really cool. And like, you can always see cool stuff there. But I can't bring my binoculars to the beach because people don't know you're looking at birds.
Yeah.
They don't know. And so, like, if it is a thing I've, like, I had to learn this where I was like, this, if this makes one person uncomfortable, it's, like, not a good thing. Because it is a shared space. It is a natural
right.
space. But it's also a social space. But you can't be antisocial. Oh, yeah, because you can be antisocial at the beach. But, like, you, I can't, like.
Cause you
if
can't
I'm
live
straight,
as though no one else is around you. You can't
yeah.
be like, yeah, you can't blast your music. You can't fucking have your dong out. Like, there are some regulations because there are other people there.
And it would not be crazy for a fucking creep to look at people in bathing suits with binoculars. Like, that's not
no,
a
that's
crazy
not outlandish.
Thing to happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
why I can't be like, no, don't they understand? I would never do that. I'm looking at the animals. Like, it's
funny. We talk, my wife and I always talk joking, not really jokingly, but we always say like, things that are low-key male privilege and low-key female privilege because we're
sure.
both cishets. So it's like, for us, we're just constantly saying shit like me going jogging at night or camping solo is male privilege.
Sure.
And I always joke that it's 300-pound male privilege of like, like I'm also a large person. But she passed me she brings binoculars to the beach because she likes to like spot animals out in the ocean. And she passed them to me and I go, babe, look at my face.
Yeah,
I cannot be looking through binoculars at the beach. And I'm like, that is female privilege.
Yeah,
you can be looking through binoculars. No one's going to think you're creeping. I have resting creep face. I'm like hairy and fat. Like I just look like a guy who's up to no good if you put binoculars around my neck.
And just imagine if you saw something that got you excited. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wow. You know?
Hey, sir. I'm like, no, it's the seagull behind your daughter. Like no. Okay, man. Pepper spray right into my fucking binocs. But I like that, too, because then that lets you enjoy birds in not your normal way, too. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like that's kind of fun, too. Like, all right, well, how do I bring my love of birds and looking at them to this current situation, which doesn't, I'm not allowed to use my normal tools or my normal avenues. And that, like, That's really, I'm like retroactively having an appreciation for things. Like I didn't realize what I was doing was like so enjoyable. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
retroactively getting more enjoyment out of like, yeah, remember that time you fucking smoked a doob and like watched a pelican dive for like 2 hours? And I was like, that, you know, that seemed like a waste of time at the time, but now it feels like beauty that I'm so happy I got to see it.
Yeah. This is exactly why I said looking at birds, not bird watching, because bird watching and birding are like a thing, you know?
Right.
Like you, that's taking your binoculars and going to spots and like trying to see things and recording what you see or being involved in like a greater, almost like scientific or like categorization process, which I think is cool and I think is awesome. And like, I like it. That's why I do it. But I'm also about just like seeing it. Like, what's by you? What's in your path? What can you look at when you have to sit that one day in jury duty and you have to go out of the courtyard for a while? Well, what's around, you know, like, you know, what's just paying, opening up your attention to observe what is like happening around you in that way. In a naturally focused way. Cause you can like, I mean, I people watch, I like eavesdrop. I like all that stuff too.
Right.
But it's less, that's less of like a task for me. Or, right. You know, that's less of like, that's just a thing that happens. And then being like, no, I'm outside. Well, what's around? Oh, I'm seeing ruffling up there. Oh, and because I'm like a little more trained now, I can hear a little with a little more clarity. Oh, that's that kind of bird. That's that. No, it's an interesting thing. I'm not great at identifying bird calls, but I've like a little trick to do is just wherever you're going, listen to birds and look at what is making the sound. More often than not, it will be a sparrow, right? More often than not, it's going to be a sparrow around. And then slowly you will learn, you will hear, wait, that sound, that's not a sparrow.
Right, you'll start to be able to differentiate rather than like the white noise. Like it'll be like able to pick up that. It'll be like the version of like, now I hear the song that's on the car in the radio. Like that's on the that car is blasting. Normally I just hear music as the car drives by, but now because I'm adjusted to, I'm hearing the actual song, and that's really interesting. Yeah.
Wait, that's not the fray. Because everywhere you're going, I'm hearing the fray.
People be blasting the fray.
But then you start being like, wait, that's not the... Wait, what is that song? That's not the fray.
Yeah. That's also something we're not saying, and I don't think we're like dancing around it, but like unsaid is like looking at birds. If you're sitting in nature, sitting outside, and you're looking at birds, it does mean you're not looking at your phone. And like for me, that's like a big victory. Part of the main reason I go to the beach is because it is the one place that when I have my phone in my hand and I'm looking at it, I go, the fuck are you doing looking at your phone? You're at the beach. Yeah. Like, I won't do that almost. I'll look at my phone at fucking concerts. You know what I mean? I'm like, what the fuck am I doing on my phone right now? I paid to be here. And it's like that energy of like, all right, I'm going to, like when you were saying, like waiting at jury duty or like sitting outside on a bench waiting for a friend to get out, you know, or you're like waiting for. And you're just the fact that you don't default take your phone out and scroll and you just stop and look up at the fucking sparrow or the jay or whatever. Like that shit is fucking, that's rich. That's like that shit that's like psychologically good for you.
And to connect it to what we were saying before, it is because it's like it gamifies things a little bit, to be honest, where it's like there's a reason for me to look outside because I want to see what can I see.
Right.
It's like what's around here, you know, and I see that. Well, if that's around here, maybe something else is around here too. Or like, you know, like, oh, I saw that. Okay, now I'm really paying attention because there's something going on. There's something going on in this area. So it is like, there is like a sort of dopamine aspect of like seeing the thing and knowing the thing. Or seeing the thing and not knowing the thing and be like, I can figure out what it is later. You know, like, look in my books. Like I can, you know, you can't look in your phone, but it's funner to look in the books, I think, to be like, what is, I don't know what that type is. So I can look at, oh, it's almost... Oh, that could have been a mockingbird or a blue jay. Well, now I just gotta see it. Now I gotta keep looking to see if I can figure it out. Like, there is, it's, you're not completely free of this sort of like dopamine incentive, but at least it's not a phone one, you know?
And right, But that's the thing. Like, and it's whatever. I need to be on my phone less, so whatever works for me. What if you don't think you need to be on your phone less, fucking let it rip. Just play. But if you're the person like finding that shit that like gets you off of it, gets you out of the screen, gets you off movies or video games and just lets you engage in the world in a different way, that's rich. That's worth it there. Even if it is like I never write down, I don't know any of these birds. I saw a cool big black one today, I saw a small gray one yesterday. Even if that's like the maximum you're doing, that's going to be more enriching for you than almost anything else.
And it builds without you doing anything. I saw that black one before. I'm pretty sure it's a crow. Someone told me that it's actually a raven because it's bigger than crows. Oh, okay. I thought it was a crow, but now I realize it's a raven. Like,
And then a day later, you're like, that's a crow.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah, now I've seen a crow and a raven this week. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that type of stuff is really addicting. And, like, you just by paying attention, you build knowledge and you build sort of like excitement a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
That's a Robin? Okay. Wait, what's that thing? That's not a Robin? Okay. This is killing me that I can't kill you the specific of what's not a Robin. Do you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Like, I can't find that perfect bird reference. Fuck.
All right. Edit this all out, please. Protect me.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, this is part of it too. It's like, I'm not here to be an expert. I'm not an expert. I just appreciate being on like the path of paying attention to the natural world.
Right. And that's like the level of fucking commitment we're looking for here at High and Mighty. This is the kind of like, no one's an expert, but it's intriguing. And speaking of intriguing, why don't mm-hmm. you tell my listeners, you know, this is the plug portion of High and Mighty. Where can people find you and what you're doing over at Rude Tales and otherwise?
So I'm a cast member on the podcast Rude Tales of Magic on the HeadGum Network, and then I'm also a cast member on the podcast ODs, Those Stars of Space, produced by Bucket of Milk, and I also did a podcast years ago at Forever Dog called Hampton High, the Hampton High podcast. I still am proud of those episodes.
Hell yeah!
So you can listen to them. It's like the whole premise was it's me, I'm Hampton, I'm a junior in high school, and I'm talking to Rockville Prep's most interesting school staff and all the above, you know, and right. Comedians come on and pretend to be characters. I'm a comedian in New York, so follow me on Instagram at IamKingBozo. That's my Instagram. I had a project where I like made little cards anonymously and gave them out to strangers and called myself King Bozo, and then got it's over stuck. The anonymity thing. And then on Twitter, I am Timothy Platt, but I don't know. We're not talking about Twitter, but I don't even know if that's a place I am anymore, but I'm
no,
there. I
have
guess.
It. Yeah. Add me.
I promote on there.
Yeah.
I promote on there to see shows. So if you want to come see me perform,
that's the spot.
And yeah, I don't know when this is coming out. I've got some shows this summer, but I don't
this
know.
This will come out towards in August. So get hyped. Search him out. You can probably open up the show notes of this and have Rude Tales and Tim's Twitter and whatever linked right here, his website, cool. Whatever. Just click it and find him there, motherfuckers.
That's the way. Cool.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciated this conversation.
Thank you.
I enjoyed myself. I have a squirrel that comes to my office window that I can look at. Now I'm going to start trying to keep an eye out for some birds as well. I'm going to open up my Beauty and the Beast lifestyle here and meet more animals in my neighborhood.
I recommend buying a cheap pair of binoculars and just put it in a spot in the window that you do tend to see stuff. And just like get in the habit of trying it out. Since you mentioned Beauty and the Beast, it will open up a whole new world. Which I recognize as a different movie. Yeah.
I'm still circling. I'm close. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm cut from the improv team? Fuck. Okay. See you later.
I just do think that is funny. Since you mentioned Beauty and the Beast, this is a whole new
world. I'd like to take you for a magic carpet ride. Okay.
I mean, I get it. Yeah.
Listeners, you know, I have Action Boys, my other podcast. Check me out there, actionboys.biz, and 101 Places to Party Before You Die. Now on Max, still on Max, ? Who knows? We're recording a lot of High and Mighties in advance, so maybe the website has crumbled, or at least they found out we're a tax break to destroy us. So we'll find out soon enough. Bye, shitheads! High and Mighty.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now.
somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane. It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Well, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after 3 years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!